cooking is such an aesthetic thing too. You know, it's so much more than just, I mean, it's all about taste, but it really is a visual thing, actually just cooking the food. And so if you're not somewhere that's pleasing to the eye, it's really hard to love what you're doing.
This is Something from Nothing, a podcast about the creative process and the individuals involved. I'm Justin Lewis. This week's show starts in September of 2015. An old brick renovated building has opened its doors for the first time in years. The natural wooden floors creak as curious patrons shuffle into the newest Paducah eatery. People gather at the bar as others sit in the open dining area. Large parties meet up and sit at tables. They laugh and share stories. There are couples on date night. In the kitchen, cooks are hard at work, prepping unique food combinations folks in this region are not used to eating. The energy from the crowd is evident. It was highly anticipated. It was memorable. It was
opening night of Freight House, and people were excited. That night was like perfect.
Well, it was almost perfect. There were a few things.
People did not want to get up. Like, you think people will be here for a certain amount of time. So when you're taking reservations, you allot a certain amount of time for each table size. But that wasn't what happened. People stayed forever. They stayed, they drank, they ordered more food, they ate, they talked to their neighbor, they got up and walked around and talked to other tables. And that second seating, they waited, and we were handing out glasses of wine to the front because we did not want people to leave upset, because, you know, first impression is everything, and we did not want people to be...
She did not want people to be disappointed or unable to report anything but a positive experience. Sarah and her crew were surprised in a few ways that night.
Like, we didn't sell things that we thought we would sell.
But they sold a lot more of other things.
We ran out of, like, all kinds of stuff. Because everybody wanted to try everything. And everybody wanted bottles of wine. And everybody wanted four glasses of wine. And everybody wanted to try the cocktails. And we were like, well, all right. So we don't have enough wine at all. We don't have enough booze at all. So, I mean, it was like, everything we didn't have... We had not prepared enough.
And in spite of all those imperfections, it was still beautiful in Sarah's view.
That opening night was amazing, though. But when it was over, we cracked a couple really good bottles of champagne and all stood around that table, that bowling alley table, and toasted with all of my employees. And it was this moment of pride, like this moment that I have... And every year when it pops up on my Facebook memories, I, like, get teary-eyed. I think I probably will forever. It was, you know, it's something that every cook dreams of. Every cook dreams of, like, opening their own restaurant one day. And it was, you know, and I did it. And it actually happened.
This week's episode, the story of how Sarah Bradley made her dream come true by opening Freight House. Sarah's love for cooking started by practicing with her sister Ellen, who plays another key role in this story a little later on.
Growing up, we had, in our kitchen, there were three walls that, you know, they had the upper cabinets and then, like, you had your lowers, and the backsplash was lined with these mirrors. So it was the perfect height for two children to pretend that those were cameras, and that's when... It was before cooking shows were super popular. I mean, the cooking shows were Julia Childs and things like that. And my sister and I would get out a couple of these cookbooks that we had that were for children, and we would make the things that were in them. And I was the chef, and she was my helper. And we would duplicate the items that were in these cookbooks. And we would have – those were the cameras, and we would do those. And I mean, we would cook everything.
But it wasn't just her and her sister.
Cooking has always been a family affair in my life. You know, my mother had meals for us. We didn't do a lot of ordering of food. We didn't do a lot of takeout. She cooked almost every night.
Then there was Sarah's paternal grandmother, who she affectionately called Gimper.
They were from Eastern Kentucky. And every time I would go there, I can remember, you know, standing on a chair and wanting to help her and not be outside and play with all the other kids. I wanted to help her. I wanted to go outside and help them pick all the things in the garden. They had a huge garden. I wanted to go do that. I didn't necessarily want to go run up the mountain and, you know, get chigger bites and do all that stuff. I wanted to stay and help them and then go back in the kitchen and make apple butter. Like, that seemed more interesting to me than to go, you know, pick, like, chase frogs in the creek or something like that. I don't know what they would do.
And please don't think Sarah is a prissy Susie homemaker. She wasn't trying to avoid getting dirty or anything like that. In fact, this quote, it perfectly captures her.
You know, we were all going to get dirty and messy anyway, so I figured I might as well just do it in a kitchen.
I think Sarah still lives by this code. Anyway, back to family. For Thanksgiving,
There's never enough food to cook. Like, and it's because the reason we always have so much food, like at other people's Thanksgivings, I feel like there's always so much food because everything has become a tradition. Mm-hmm. That's not at my house. Like, at our house, there's always a million new things on the table. Like, we have a few things that we always have to have. Like, there's always a spinach casserole that is overbaked because my parents overbaked it one time when my grandfather cut my father's leg with a chainsaw and they had to take him to the hospital on Thanksgiving, and they left it in the oven and they realized they thought it tasted better that way. So we spent our whole entire childhood eating overcooked spinach casserole, and that's still the tradition. That's still how we eat it. You know, there's like a few things we always have to have.
Like a cranberry walnut casserole from a good friend's recipe. But generally,
everything else is new. You know, we don't stick to traditions. It's always about trying new things, inventing new things, and there's never enough things to be cooked at our Thanksgivings. And, you know, so that's the way it's been since my childhood. A little different than everybody else, but yeah. I think a little bit better, a little more exciting.
Before I had the opportunity to point it out to her, she realized.
Maybe that's why I have a menu that changes constantly. Maybe that's why, you know, I have a restaurant that cooks with the seasons. And maybe that's why, you know, I'm scatterbrained. Maybe that's why I can never decide what I want to do. Because I'm always like, I want a million different options of food to eat. And I always want something different. And that's because there's a million different flavors and I get tired of one thing. And why would you want to eat the same thing every year when you can find a million different things to eat? You know, it's fun that way.
There will be more on Freight House later. First, it's worth pointing out, it wasn't just at home where her development happened. Sarah recalled her first job.
I was like 15. I couldn't even drive to work. My mom had to pick me up and take me.
Sarah worked at Fun Zone. She was hired to work out front and help with parties and that sort of thing. However, dealing with kids crawling around plastic pipes and playing games wasn't where she gravitated.
I always hung out in the back and helped in the kitchen instead.
Some of the responsibilities she took on were to
decorate the cakes and help make pizzas in the back. I always wanted to be in the kitchen. I never wanted to be like in the front.
When Sarah graduated from high school, she, like all seniors, had to figure out what to do next.
I wanted to go to culinary school.
But for Sarah, the public-funded money towards tuition at a state university like Kentucky, where she ended up attending, was too difficult to pass on. As she pointed out, the option of culinary school is very expensive. So she graduated from UK with a degree in psychology and started work at a geriatric psychiatric ward. But that love of the kitchen was not going away, so she got a job at a catering place, just to make sure that she would like it, professionally. Well, she loved it. And then the day she made up her mind to go to culinary school. She was at her brother's and on the computer.
Searching culinary school. And like Johnson & Wales popped up. And I thought, oh, I could go there. It was in Charleston, South Carolina at the time. And then I started telling somebody about Charleston, South Carolina. Johnson & Wells. They're like, you know that school closed down, right? I was like, well, okay. I guess I won't go there. And then I looked it up to see if they were telling that. Like, I looked it up like a week or two later, see if it was true, and realized no, actually they had, you know, Johnson & Wells all over the place, and that they were a really good culinary school, and I could go to pretty much culinary school anywhere I wanted. And I was like, I'm out. I'm done. I'm done with Lexington. I never wanted to be. I'm done with Kentucky. I'm going to go do something else. Because I've always kind of been like, if I don't go and do it right now, I'm never going to do it. Like, if I don't move to New York right now, I'm never going to do it. If I don't move to Birmingham right now, I'm never going to do it. If I don't buy this purse today, I'm never going to. Like, it's, you know, I kind of do stuff like that. And so I came home to Paducah, and I didn't have the money to go to it.
As already mentioned, tuition was costly after Sarah graduated high school, and it had not come down. So, as with much of her story, she utilized a strong family support. She came to Paducah.
And I asked my grandpa Julius if he would help me go to culinary school, because he always believed in education. He got his GED when he was the same year that my aunt, like one of his daughters, graduated from high school. He graduated from high school because he never got to go to high school because it was during the Great Depression and he had to work at his store. So he was always talking about how proud he was of people when they went to college. So I asked him if he could help me go, and he said, of course I'll help you go to college. And so I decided I was going to go. And I went, and it was the best decision I made.
She knew a lot about cooking going in. I mean, she was, after all, hosting a cooking show as a child. But for her, the primary benefit was the connections to the business.
It led me to to meet the chef that I worked for that started this path, which brought me home. It wouldn't have happened if I hadn't gone to culinary school.
The school she graduated from is Johnson & Wells, and it's located in Charlotte.
And then worked for a gentleman there, John Bell, then moved to Birmingham and worked in Birmingham.
Sarah has drawn from her experiences in several different spots. She spoke specifically about her time in New York City and Chicago.
New York was the beginning of my career. It was cutthroat, and all I cared about was cooking. I didn't care as much about the people around me. I just cared about cooking and being the best cook in the kitchen and getting to the top the quickest.
Then she moved to Chicago to be a little closer to family. And while in Chicago,
I learned a lot about ingredients and how to prepare them. I was still getting to work with beautiful ingredients, but I was learning about what it was like to treat people well and still have them work for you. Know, you didn't have to be the asshole. You could be really nice and people would work just as hard, if not harder, for you. And so, you know, that was what I took away from Chicago.
At one time, Sarah wanted to start her own place in one of those big cities. But she said it was just so hard to get a profit in that market. And then she told me the specific moment she decided to start a restaurant in Paducah.
I was with my little sister. We were in down in Florida on a family vacation, and we were like swimming around in a pool. Well, the whole family was there. We were in a pool swimming around, and I was like, you know, I think I would want to open a restaurant in Paducah.
So her younger sister did some quick research with her phone the way any good millennial would.
She like got on her phone and like pulled up Paducah on Wikipedia and was like, well, they say it's a micropolitan and it has this much stuff and it serves this many people. And she was like, why don't you ask mom and dad if they would, you know, like if they would do it, if they would help you. She said, you know, mom would make the desserts. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to see what they think about it.
So on that trip, she posed the question to her parents. What do you think about me coming home to open a restaurant in Paducah? Their response?
That would be awesome. And then I was like, okay. And then after that, I started coming home from Chicago like every weekend and looking at places and hearing about this new brewery that was going to open and this guy who was redoing the Coke plant and hearing about like the things that are happening through Maiden Alley, like October, like all of these things that are happening in the Arts House Cinema and the, you know, all the stuff that's growing. And I kind of just felt like there was this energy and that I had an option. I could stay in Chicago and just be another cook and another person that worked for someone and run someone else's restaurants, or I could move home and have my own and be part of the thing that, like, you know, change in Paducah.
Sarah has achieved that, but it took a lot of work. After the decision to come home,
I was living with my folks when I first moved back because I didn't have a job. And, you know, we were going looking at all these places over and over again. And I got locked in. We were snowed into to their house. And I said, all right, this is the one part of my business plan that is really missing. So I wrote a fake schedule, fake menu, I mean, everything. I crunched every number down to the penny. And then I knew how many seats I needed. And then from there, I was like, this is how many seats I need. This is how many this I need. And that's where it really narrowed it down. And so then it kind of narrowed the search to, all right, this is more of what I wanted. I knew I wanted to be downtown. And there were a couple of places that we almost purchased.
One of which was this nice place just down the street from her father's law practice. She saw it as
this beautiful, like, southern restaurant and an old house. It'll be great. And then I was going to do it.
But before she made the move, someone called Sarah's mother with an idea of the perfect place. The old rundown freight building that was used many years ago. It was in need of work would be an understatement. It didn't even have a real door. They had to find a hole in the wall and then
crawled in here. It was freezing cold. Dead birds, mattresses on the floor. Like, it was rough in here, but it was, I immediately, like, you know, my parents said, the look on my face was like absolute joy. I knew that this was it. I could picture it. I could see, you know, thousands of pounds of potatoes being stacked in here. I could see all of that happening for 50 years, and then I could see people in here dining and cooks working. And I immediately knew that that's where the kitchen was going to be, and that's where the bar was going to be. And this is exactly what I pictured the moment I walked in, and it all came to...
It came to be with a ton of hard work. Sarah purchased this shell of a building in February and had opening night in late September. Sarah said work was done 7 days a week by the construction crew, and she was here for all of them. She had a very specific vision for the building and wanted to make sure it was done right, down to the most minor detail. In our conversation, she shared that there were times when she thought something was not just completely level and had the workers get out a level. And she was right. Being creative with what she had in front of her not only applied with the old rundown building, it's how she approaches cooking.
Coming in the morning and my head is full of ideas, and I get out these pieces of paper, which are the old menus. I flip them upside down, and I just start to write down ideas until they come to a new dish around 1:30, which is about 30 minutes before the cooks show up. I go back and look at my notes, and then they'll come, and they'll say, all right, what's the new dish? And then I'll say, and then that's how I come up with a dish. It's literally, there's no like fancy way that we come up with dishes here. They are totally cook from the hip. These are the ingredients we have. How do we make them taste beautiful? How do they taste the best that they can taste? So that's the cooking style.
One reason Sarah takes her cooking seriously is because
we're paying, you know, good money for all of these products, and the people that are growing them have really invested a lot of time and effort. And so we really want to treat them with a lot of respect. And so when it comes time to prep and to, you know, work on cooking them, you know, business is business. We have to take extra care of them. We can't just, you know, put them in the oven and burn them and, you know, overcook them and do all these things. We have to show them a lot of attention.
Her approach sure seems to be working.
3 years into it, it runs like clockwork here.
And that is the story of Freight House, so far. Sarah is only taking this further with projects like Cartel, representing Paducah out of the country. This is Something From Nothing, a podcast about the creative process and the individuals involved. See more about Freight House on their website, freighthousefood.com, and all the usual social media outlets. Be sure and visit Freight House for yourself and tell Sarah you were sent by me, your host, Justin Lewis. This episode was produced by me and Taylor Inman. Thanks for listening.